Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Tired Mummy Podcast, a safe platform where we can openly discuss the highs and lows of parenthood, judgment free. Join me in authentic conversations with mums and dads from across the globe. Let's help each other feel less alone, let's grow and feel better in our parenting skin together. Come join our tribe while we get into some real talk. And don't forget, bring your coffee. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Alice Lainsbury, and you're listening to episode number 21. Welcome to the last episode of season one. I cannot believe I'm at 21 episodes and at the end of a season. I'm so excited to bring you more epic guests in season two. I've got some really cool changes coming, so I'm really excited to launch that in a couple of weeks. I'm going to take a little break. I hope you're all having a great day. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really excited to bring you Nikki. She is from Wisdom from Working Mums. Nikki is an executive coach supporting high-achieving women in combining careers in motherhood in a more successful and sustainable way. That sounds pretty epic to me. Now, I actually came across Nikki when I was on the internet looking for some answers, I suppose, and I found her blog, Becoming a Mum Without a Mum. And the way she wrote about her experience deeply resonated with me, and I just knew that we needed to talk about this on the podcast. So the title of the episode speaks for itself. We're talking about becoming a mum without a mum. Before we dive in, if you love this episode, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review and subscribe so you never miss an episode. It's super quick and it's super easy, and it helps support me and my little family. All right, let's get started. Hello, Nikki, and welcome to the podcast. I am so, so grateful to have you on the show. I always kick off the episode asking the same question. So could you please let the listeners know a little bit about you and what's one piece of parenting advice you wished you'd never listened to?
Oh, that's such a great question. My name's Nikki. Thank you so much for inviting me onto your podcast. I'm a mum of two children. I've got a boy who's 9 years old and a little girl that's 4 years old. And I'm married. I live in the centre of the UK near a city called Birmingham, but I live out in the countryside. And professionally, I've been an executive coach and leadership coach for coming up for 17 years. And it was only with my own challenging journey into motherhood that I realised that more women needed support in motherhood, particularly when they were trying to combine their career and motherhood. So just over 4 years ago, I set up a division of my business called Wisdom for Working Mums. And I really help women combine work, life and motherhood in a more successful and sustainable way without sacrificing their sanity or well-being in the process. I think for me, the advice was that being a mum is the most natural thing in the world, because at times it has felt far from that. And I think that piece of advice for me meant that when I struggled or I didn't know the answer, that I was somehow not good enough, that there was something wrong with me. So whilst from a nature perspective and procreation, it's been around for millennia, I think the actual role of mothering in the paradigm of motherhood that we live in our society at the moment, I think is far from natural in terms of the expectations and what we see on social media. And, you know, yeah, for me, that was probably the most unhelpful advice, because I made myself wrong in the process when it didn't feel natural and easy.
I'm guessing you are definitely not alone in that experience. It's a very strange world to parent in at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, today I wanted to talk to you about becoming a mum without a mum. I really resonated with a blog you wrote on this topic. There was a quote in particular you wrote that really struck me, and that was, "The grief of not having your mum around isn't limited to losing her through death." And these words really led me to feel that I was allowed to grieve, because I almost didn't feel worthy of grieving because I didn't lose my mum through death. So I just wanted to thank you for those words. I know that there's so many mothers walking this motherless path. So can you please share with us some of the hardest moments for you not having your mum around?
Yeah, and I think to set the context, I'd lost my mum in 2005. She died really suddenly, really unexpectedly. And I actually had the gift. I don't know if it is, that's the right word. But I ended up, at the time I was on holiday in the Maldives when she died. And it was 24 hours before we could get a flight home. So I was sitting in absolute paradise, coming to terms with really the worst news that I'd ever experienced in my life at that point. And so it enabled me kind of deep reflection in those 24 hours, really asking the questions, you know, what is life about? What am I doing? And I came back and decided to hand my notice in. I'd got a big corporate job at the time. I was got this big high flying career. And I decided to hand my notice in, and I took a year out. So I had a year of really leaning into my grief, and I, you know, deeply grieved for it. And I felt privileged that I had the time and the space to do that, because it was prior to having my children. So I'd really gone on a journey with my grief. So fast forward to 2013, when I had my first child, I really thought that I'd done my grieving. Yes, there were times where I felt sad, and, you know, there were days where it would hit me unexpectedly, but I felt in quite a good place in terms of coming to terms with my mum's death. And I was at a really great place in my life, professionally, personally, and it just felt, you know, a great time to be entering into the journey of motherhood. So when my first child was born, actually through my pregnancy, I didn't feel the grief particularly. Yes, I was sad that she wasn't going to be there to meet my baby, and sad that she wasn't around, but it just felt that kind of normal underlying grief that I would have, you know, most days. Mm. But it was when my first child was born, it kind of hit me. It hit me like a sledgehammer, and I just wasn't prepared for it. And I'd actually had a really good friend who'd lost her mum years before, and she'd said when she became a mum, she warned me. She said, you know, becoming a mum without your mum, it will hit you. And I remember hearing that and thinking, no, I don't think it will. You know, I just was naive, I think. And so it hit me really unexpectedly, literally, I think, in those first couple of days. And I think what I hadn't anticipated was how vulnerable I was going to feel, mum. The uncertainty, the just physically how vulnerable I felt, that the actual birth had been quite challenging. And then having this newborn that I just had no idea what to do with. And It was a very visceral response in terms of my grief. It wasn't necessarily an emotional level. It was just kind of in my body. And then over the coming weeks, that grief really, really built. And it's really difficult to extract, because my son ended up being quite ill, and we were in and out of hospital that first year. So I was particularly vulnerable and I'd got a particularly vulnerable child. So I think that level of grief then was layered in because I, up until that point, would be very strong and independent. That's naturally who I am. Personality-wise, I don't feel like I need a lot of help. With times I probably do, but don't admit it to myself. But I think that journey into motherhood cracked me open in terms of you can't do this alone. It doesn't matter how strong and independent you're trying to be. You need that village around you and you need maternal figures. And so I've lost my mum, but actually my mum's family all live away. They don't live locally. So I hadn't got that maternal type of figure in my life. And I've got an amazing mother-in-law who was brilliant, but actually she's very practical. She's not necessarily the most embedded in her maternal energy. So while she was a great support, it wasn't actually what I needed at that point. So just everything from all of the questions that I've got about what motherhood is, and is this normal for a baby? And actually, what was I like as a baby? And did my mum feel the same? And just trying to make sense of this new world that I was entering into, I hadn't realized how much I'd need my mum to help me make sense. And not having her around kind of made that even more disorientating, which then kind of opened up this new well of grief that I just hadn't anticipated would be there.
Yeah, you just want to pick up the phone and ask all of the questions. Have someone hold you like you're holding your child.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that was the bit that really surprised me, because as I say, even as a young child, I've always been very strong and independent and hadn't felt like I needed a lot of mothering. And I had an amazing mum who just knew the distance she needed to be supportive enough, but not smothering. So she, looking back, I didn't realise at the time, she navigated that beautifully. So I hadn't actually realised how much mothering I'd needed. I was like, no, I'm strong, independent. I've got myself together. And yeah. And I remember reading a book by Clarissa, I think it's Pinkott, who wrote a book called Women Who Run With The Wolves. And it's all about the journey of being a woman through from young girl through to kind of an older woman. And she actually writes that when you become a mum, you become a child mother and you need elderly or elders around you that help teach you to become a kind of grown mother. And I remember reading that in that book and that was it. I was a child mother. I was new. I needed my elders around me to help guide me and shape me in that role. And I hadn't anticipated that. And I think I really, really missed that and had to consciously start to create that. And I hadn't, you know, knowing what I know now, I would have done that much earlier before I gave birth. I had to kind of do it retrospectively, which was more difficult.
You need all that inner wisdom that's, you know, been before you and passed down to you, and unfortunately Google isn't the same.
Yeah,
massively. Like, I feel like a lot of mothers these days don't have, especially motherless mothers, they don't have that, plus they don't have village and they're going to the internet to find all the answers, and it's not helpful.
Yeah,
we really do need those elders, those aunts, you know, the grandmothers. Yeah. How did you move through your grief after your birth?
I think I moved through it quite slowly and kind of was a lot of the time in that first year in survival mode. So there was like this whole background of grief, but kind of just having to get on and do the job in hand of being a mother. So that was really difficult because I didn't feel that I had the time and space to really make sense of my grief, because you've got this little newborn that's completely dependent on you. So that felt difficult at times, particularly when I look at it in context of when my mum first died and how much time and space I had to really connect to my grief, understand it and work through it. So it felt more difficult because actually I almost had to put my needs to one side to focus on the needs of my child. Yeah. So at times it felt like it was a very slow process because I hadn't got time to make sense of it or connect to it and do it in a healthy way, I suppose. So I kind of just shoved it away and just kept moving forward of the day-to-day task of keeping a newborn alive and happy and all of the things that go along with being a mother. And it's interesting because about 9 months after I had my first child, I started to get ill. And I just picked up every cold going, and I hadn't been that kind of person before. I'd always had quite a good immune system, and I just kept getting iller and iller and iller, to the point that I went to my doctors and was like, you know, something's not right here. And they did a load of blood tests. I'm like, oh, you're fine. You're just a new mum. All new mums are tired and get run down. And this went on for months and months, to the point where I became that ill. I just thought I'd got some rare condition that nobody would be able to know, because I literally could feel it in every cell of my body. I was just exhausted. And by this point, with my firstborn, actually, he was sleeping through the night by that point. My second didn't do that, but my first was. So I was like, I'm not tired from lack of sleep. I might be tired from lack of rest, but this level of tiredness isn't right. And I ended up finally going down the private route and getting diagnosed with adrenal fatigue. So I'd literally burnt myself out. And I don't know how much of that grieving process was tied into that. As I say, I'd got a baby that was in and out of hospital. So it was a difficult first year in a number of different ways, but I definitely feel not having my own mum around really contributed to that, because I'd got nothing to lean into and just feel like somebody was holding me.
Yeah.
And just knowing I was trying to hold it all on my own shoulders, which of course you can't, that's just not possible. You need that system around you. And also just not having, a few years after I had my firstborn, I ended up training in something called systemic coaching, which is based on family systems theory. And the family systems theory is all about our maternal and paternal line and what's happened in those systems that informs how we show up. And it was only then when I realized actually how important it is to energetically just being able to lean into that. Mm. It kind of, just as when you read that quote that I'd put about, it just made me feel validated. It was like, it's not because I'm not strong enough. It's not because I, you know, wasn't, you know, digging in deep enough and just getting on with it. It's like, we need this. It's just part of nature. We need to feel that. So yeah, navigating that first year. And I would say it was the first probably 3 years. It wasn't limited to the newborn stage. And I think it was only when I had my second child, who I ended up having secondary infertility, so didn't think I could have another child, had multiple miscarriages, and ended up having my second child nearly 5 years later. And it was only at that point I feel that I actually healed myself, because I was prepared and set myself up for that second pregnancy and beyond in a much different way. And I actually, yeah, it felt like more of a healing experience. The other, like my first child broke me open, and yeah, it felt very disorientating. And so, yeah, that was very different.
Yeah. So when you had your second child, did you think that you would grieve again, or how did you navigate that?
Yeah, I very much was prepared for it. And I think what I found with my own grief around my mother is that the times that I'm prepared, like Christmas Day, like Mother's Day, actually I'm more resourced to deal with it. It's the random days that come and take me by surprise that I would find more difficult with my grief. So I think definitely being psychologically prepared that, oh, this is probably going to be really, really difficult, made it less so. But I actually did some specific things. So I really built a village around me of people that could help from that maternal perspective. And what I realized was that nobody can replace my mum, and nor should they. So recognizing that it's not up to my husband, it's not up to my mother-in-law to try and fill that void. They can't and they shouldn't. And if I recruit them into that position, it's really unhealthy. So knowing that there was going to be this space that would feel like a void, that like the grief would be there, but then building people around me that could help support me. So I hired a postnatal doula after my second was born, because I'd got a very lively five-year-old that was going to be on school holidays when I was going to be giving birth.
Yeah.
So I was like, actually coming home with a newborn and having a five-year-old that is very full on. My husband was going back to work after 2 weeks. So I was like, actually, I'm going to need a few weeks of help. So I hired somebody to come in two days a week, just for a couple of hours, either that they would hold the baby while I had a bath, And actually what it turned out that I needed was for her to go and play with my five-year-old. So he would be occupied. He had connection. His bucket could be filled up with attention so I could focus on the newborn. And I would never have even, I wouldn't have thought A, that even existed with my firstborn. And even if it had existed, I would never have given myself permission to do that. I would be like, that's my role as a mother. Surely that's what I should be doing. But it made such a huge difference. And I literally built kind of friends or hired people. You know, I did things like I had a cleaner come in twice a week. I was like, what do I need to feel like I can show up for my family and be the best I can? And what are the roles that I need around me? So it gave me a huge amount of permission. And I kind of had more conversations with friends about, you know, this, I anticipate this is going to, how I'm going to feel, and this is what I might need from you. You know, one of my friends brought me over food, cooked some home cooked food and brought that round. Another came round and filled my fridge, and just all the things that my mum or a mother that we see in the traditional sense would have done. And I really gave myself permission to ask for the help and receive it. And I would never have done that the first time around. So yeah, those things really, really helped. And I had, I did a systemic session with the lady who trained me in family systems, the most beautiful kind of healing woman. I had a session with her in anticipation, and we just talked through it. It was almost like a counseling session, and just voicing that this is probably going to be difficult. What do I need to resource myself? What are the resources I need around me? And how do I lean into that energy, even if it's no longer around?
Yeah.
And that just did something in me. Yeah. So I think I just gave myself the compassion that that was what was going to happen, and put in place what would help me feel cared for in that way.
So amazing. So much wisdom and really good insight and helpful tools. It's going to help other mamas feel so much less alone.
I think it's the great taboo that's not spoken about, because it never even occurred to me. And even when that friend had said to me a few years before, I was just like, well, no, why would I? I've grieved, you know.
Yeah.
I'm at a different stage in my life. And I think what was different with the grief when I became a mum compared to when I first lost her, when I first lost my mum, I was 28. I was living with my partner, who's now my husband. I'd got an independent life where I no longer was dependent on my mum in that way. Yes, we had the most amazing relationship. We spoke 2 or 3 times a day. So I was connected to her, but I didn't need her. I just wanted her in my life.
Yeah.
Whereas when I became a mum, I actually needed her, and that I had never anticipated. Like, I was a grown woman. Why would I need my mum? Look, yes, I love her and I want her around, but I wouldn't need her.
Yeah.
And I think we underestimate when we become mums how much we need to be mothered.
Absolutely. That's definitely something I wasn't anticipating either. I mean, there was a lot of things.
Yeah.
that was definitely one of them. For any motherless mamas out there, motherhood, as we've just discussed, is not what we imagined it to be, because we don't have that love and support around, and we really have to try and reconcile that. Is there any advice or actions our mamas can take to help them on their path to healing?
Yeah, I think there's two key aspects for me. The one is being able to mother yourself. And what I mean by that is, a lot of the women that I work with tend to be highly driven, they're highly successful, they've got where they've got to by really pushing themselves quite hard. And actually, in that motherhood journey, it's not about pushing hard, it's being able to be compassionate with ourselves. And so being able to be kind and compassionate. And a lot of what compassion is about is two things, really. If you think about what a mother does to a crying child, they will use soothing. You know, we stroke or we pat. So it's using that actual physical soothing our nervous systems. And we use gentle tones. You know, they're there. It's okay. It's okay. You're doing your best. And so the first thing I would say is, what can you do around those two aspects to yourself? So using kind, gentle tones with yourself. You know, my word, this is difficult. you are doing your best, and I am so proud of you. And even as I say, that's making me feel upset, because those are not necessarily words we would use with ourselves.
It's so true.
So that mothering is being compassionate, showing ourselves a self-compassion by using gentle, soothing tone and words with ourselves. And, you know, if you're having that difficult day, just holding our heart and going, wow, this is hard, but you're doing your best. And for me, what I found was I'm not very good at soothing myself. So I would actually book myself regular massage, regular reflexology, because that's literally touch is soothing and would soothe my nervous system and allow me to be kinder and gentle to myself. So if I hadn't got the mother that was doing that for me, I'd have to take the responsibility for doing that for myself and finding the ways that would allow me to do it. So that's the first piece, is, you know, taking some self-responsibility about what can I do to mother myself. And then that second piece about looking around me to see how can I consciously choose a village that can support me, whether those be other family, other friends, knowing they're never going to be my mother and nor should they be. But what are the aspects that I might need to feel mothered and make that journey easier, even if it is just somebody cooking me a home-cooked meal, running me a bath, you know, whatever it might be that a mother would do that says, come on, it's just go and have an early night. You are tired. There's nothing more you can do to make today better. Just go and have a good night's sleep. You know, those mothering kind of energies around us. So doing it for ourselves, but also consciously and intentionally creating that village that can help.
So important. Got quite emotional throughout this whole chat, because there's just so many great shares that you've shared with us today, and I just know it's going to help so many mums, and I just resonate honestly with every word that came out of your mouth. So I really just wanted to thank you so much for joining us today, and I'm just so grateful for you coming on and talking about this super important topic.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me. And, you know, I think if there's one thing we can do with our own journeys is help other people, just like you're doing with this podcast. You know, somebody once said to me, your mess is your message. And I'm like, oh gosh, how true is that? You know, it's only often when we go through our painful moments that we feel compelled to help others. And so thank you for giving me the gift of doing that.
Oh man, what an amazing chat that was. I was literally holding back tears the whole time. I'm not sure if it was because I personally could relate to everything that she was saying, or what it was. She is so maternal. She's just got this great vibe, this great energy, and I'm just so, so grateful to have connected with her. So if you resonated with Nikki and you would like to connect with her also, you can find her at Wisdom for Working Mums on Instagram or wisdomforworkingmums.co.uk. She has so many resources on her website, so be sure to check it out. Thank you so much for joining me, guys, and thank you for getting me through my first season. I'm honestly super grateful for every listen, every share, every review, every subscribe. If this episode was helpful to you, please share it with a mama. And yeah, I am looking forward to seeing you for season 2. Thank you so much. Until next time, this tired mummy is signing out.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.